Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, we go again. Episode 2, Series 2 of Free the Geezer. I told you we'd be consistent and I'm a man of my word, so we're back. You know what? I'm feeling a little bit more positive this week as opposed to last week. This helps. Having a red wine does help. But in light of some of the news I've seen today, I'm starting to see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. Hopefully we'll be out of lockdown very soon. So do you know what? Just to the possibility of that, everyone, bit of a round of applause, please, for getting out of lockdown soon. Jesus Christ, it's been a long time. Quickly, bit of admin. Subscribe. If you want notifications for when this episode's going to drop, please subscribe. I don't ask much of you. Please do that. Okay, on to the guest. We've benched G-Man after last week. He put in a good performance, put in a good shift, to be fair.
Nah.
Temporarily. But this week, we've got a new one of our pals. What's the best way of putting it? He's the only person I know who throws as good events as we do.
He's
North London's finest Chelsea supporter, so you know where the conflict's going to be. But somewhat of our Northern correspondent, Mr. TJ himself. Make some noise for TJ on the show.
Hey, our pal.
I say pal fucking loosely, but he's our pal anyway. Right, T, let him know what you do. Let him know what you do and give yourself a better introduction than that, please.
Yeah, my name's TJ. I do events for a living. I've been doing events since I finished university. I started off doing some events in London and now I've moved up to Leeds. I do events there, but the most of my career I've done events in was in Loughborough University, which is where I went to uni. And yeah, just do that for a living. I've been doing it ever since I was an adult and...
You know what he is?
Just been going in. Go on.
He's a Black Van Wilder. Anyone seen the film Black Van Wilder?
Oh my God.
He's a Robin Hood. But he knows how to have a good time and he makes sure everyone else does. So
That's the main thing.
See, you listen to the show... You live in a dream, yeah. T, you listened to the show last week, so you know what this is about. For anyone who don't, this pod is for every type of geezer. We do not discriminate. Every issue that we discussed on WhatsApp or messages we've been sent in by fans, tweets, headlines, will be discussed and it will be explosive. That's a guarantee. That's a Dutch promise. Everyone all right? Scotty, how are you doing?
Sweet, mate. All good.
Look at that background he's got. Everyone's good. Everyone's set. Let's get into it. Jim, what's the first topic, mate?
Right. So this week, we're starting with a tweet, and I believe this tweet caught your eye, John, in the aftermath following the shoving of someone considered to be a West London hero. So the tweet comes from Frank Khalid at Frank Khalid UK, and it reads... Joe Cole claims Frank Lampard's Chelsea sacking was the harshest in the Roman Abramovich era and insists his old club have made a mistake by getting rid of his former teammate. End of tweet.
Thanks, Jim. TJ, you are a Chelsea fan. Mm-hmm. We have discussed this in our personal lives.
Yeah.
Justify why on earth you got rid of the best player to ever play for your club. When he got you to a top four last season without any transfer spend and he's having his first blip, why do you think that was the right decision?
Right. Wait, first of all, I didn't say it was the right decision. No Chelsea fan will ever be like, no real, real Chelsea fan will ever be like Frank out. Fair? Like, if you separate the player from the manager, if I'm thinking about Frank the player, I'll never ever out. I will never be like Frank out, ever.
Yeah.
But. Mm. When he did get sacked, I kind of thought in my head, I was like, I'm kind of happy they've done, not happy, but I'm kind of like, I'm okay that they've done it.
You were ecstatic, TJ.
Wow.
I wasn't ecstatic. No, but
You were. Okay,
the thing is, right, everyone will say, give him time, give him time. When it's not your club, when it's your club, it's a bit different. So I could see what was happening, and I could see the mentality that the players had when we went to big games. We've never had a manager over the last 20 years where I've been so shook going into a big game as I was under Frank Lampard.
Hang on, sorry, quickly, TJ's not Scolari, not VS Boas, not Di Matteo.
No. The reason I'll say that is because I love what Frank was trying to do. He brought through the youth. He came in at a time where I don't think a lot of other top managers would have come in at that time. So he came in and he did exactly what was asked of him. He finished in the top four. But if you look at our team last season, yes, we lost Hazard. We got Pulisic. Pulisic is not as good as Hazard. I'm not trying to say that. But our team on paper, our starting 11 on paper was not terrible, which is why me and you had beef all the time when you were going, oh, you're going to finish 10th, you're going to get relegated. I was like, at minimum, at minimum, I thought we're going to finish top six last season.
Yeah.
But I was saying to you, we're going to finish top four. He finished top four and it was a good season. That's great.
Sorry to interject. Where did you think you were going to finish this year?
This year, I thought we're going to challenge for the title. Challenge, not win.
Oh, God, Brian.
Challenge. Not win. I didn't think we were going to win it because we finished how many points behind Liverpool last year? But this year, I was expecting us to...
You expected a soft challenge.
A soft challenge. I want to get to the last four or five games of the season and be like, still in with a shout of winning the league. Do you know what I mean? So after 19 games of this season, when he got sacked, I was thinking, it's okay because... You know when I was done? The Arsenal game. When we lost to you lot, that's when I was done. I'll say also,
if it weren't for that game, if it weren't for Frank being in charge of Chelsea...
Arteta would have got sacked.
When you look back at it,
it was a pivotal moment for both coaches. Because if Arteta loses that game, I don't think the way our fan base was at the time and how toxic our fan base can be at Arsenal... I even tweeted because I weren't going to publicly out Arteta at the time because I was starting to get very scared. Before there was Arteta out t-shirts being printed and whatever else. If he'd lost that game, it would have been very hard going into even West Brom. He would have lost West Brom game. It would have been hard for he would have gone. But for Frank, we look back to that game, I think that's where it went wrong.
The thing is, Go on.
I was just saying, all right, so first off, right, for you to expect a challenge for the title in his second season and the first season with silence is mental. If you look at Klopp, even Liverpool, no one expected them to fall off the way they have because they've had injuries. And City, being the animal that they are, right, challenging for the title, I would have said a realistic expectation for you like this season would have been a solid top four finish. I mean, you scraped it last year, but progress, hold on, but progress from that. But so do you really not think that for a young manager to come in who's a club legend, right, who's come in with no money, exceeded expectations in the first year, right? Yeah. No, if you hadn't got top four, no one would have really held it against him. Like you said, you were in top six yourself. So he's exceeded expectations. So do you not think just a steady build on that would have been a more realistic expectation than the fact that you've had a club legend and a young manager who's come in, done well, had barely half a season to work his new players into the side, have one poor run of form and get sacked and you think that was the right decision?
Let me just say this now. I love Frank Lampard. We've had beef before about him as a player and I've said he's better than Gerrard. We're not going to get into that because that will take an hour. But I love this guy.
He is.
But basically, I feel like what you've just said with Klopp. Klopp came into Liverpool. When was the last time Liverpool, since Benitez, they didn't really do nothing. When Klopp came in, they hadn't done much for a few years, I don't think. When Lampard came in, we won the league in, 2017 under Conte? Sarri, the season before Lampard, we won the Europa League. So it's not like he's coming into a shit team. I know we lost Hazard, and that's a massive thing, but we're not the same as that. And so when Pep came into Man City, as you just mentioned, they had won leagues again before that. Pellegrini had won leagues. They came in, and they had money to spend, blah, blah, blah. And Pep had credit.
Yeah.
No one was like, what's going to happen with Pep? Everyone knows Pep is a sick manager, right?
Mm.
We want to be an elite club. We need an elite coach. If we wanted to just challenge for the top four every season, Frank would have been great to carry on. We may have finished top four this year. We may not. I don't know.
So on to that then, T. So do you genuinely think, right? Because I know Tuchel. Like I said, I remember I called this.
I call him Tuchel now, by the way, not Tuchel. Yeah.
You call bro, it what you like. Me, if you don't win games, you'll
You're such a skinny manager, mate, I swear. Yeah. I mean, it's
Can I say, but that's the culture that Chelsea have generated. They've created this culture.
John, not just Chelsea. It's not just Chelsea. He was trying to recruit me 2 months ago, going, it's the future.
It is. No, but what I'm saying is, you've generated this culture where it literally is. We know what it takes. We've seen it. We've seen Fergie. He was given 7 years before he won a title with United.
Football's changed. What other teams done that? What other teams done that?
Yeah.
Well,
Do you think if he was given like 5 years, do you think he could have been a top coach and been challenging?
I like to weigh things up. I think there was more chance of us flopping under Frank. Yeah. Than being where we want to be. Mm. I think football's completely changed. As you said, everyone bought into Pep said it as well a couple of weeks ago. He said, everyone's about projects, but if you can't see progress in a project and you don't win games, you're going to get sacked at the end of the day.
But do you then think that... But the thing is, but progress isn't always that, yeah? Progress can be up and down. There's going to be little bumps in the road, especially with a young manager.
When there's so much money involved, we can't afford that.
So do you then think that, in reality, Frank was never really a project and he was just someone to bring in for a year with no money and said, go on, hold that, sit there, stabilise us for a year with no money, and then as soon as he had a little bit of an issue, as soon as he had the tiniest fall in form, he was straight out the door? Because to me, that was harsh. You know what I'm saying? And it looks to me like he was never really there to be given any time. Because what manager is going to come in, win games and have a constant upward trajectory? Like, it's very unrealistic. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think he was set up. I agree with you there. I think it was the board hired him. We had Sarri in charge before he was there. And everyone... Yeah. I don't know why everyone hated Sarri, because I think he did an okay job. We finished third that year. We won the Europa League. With the team he had, it was all right. The fans didn't ever take to Sarri. We had a transfer ban. We appointed Lampard to be like that connect between the fans and the club, and the fact that Lampard and Jody Morris knew all the youth players and stuff like that. But I don't think the board ever thought he was going to be a long-term option, ever.
I think the sound of the penny dropping there, mate.
No, it's the headphones dropping. I think they literally set him up, genuinely set him up.
What I will say, sorry, just to back you up on your point there, there were so many stories that came out. He wasn't allowed to say goodbye at the training ground. He went down to
Cobham. No stories, you believe him?
No, but the stories about players and there being a disconnect between him and the players in the end. And the fact that he didn't have the coaching credentials, he wasn't respected as a coach between the top senior players at the club, the Rudigers, the Aspilicuetas, these players. So that, for me, that would back the decision. But at the same time, what we have in this modern game, player power maybe is a little bit too influential at the moment. Go on.
Just to answer you on that, like I was saying earlier, that when we went to the big games, right? So we played Man City after the Arsenal game when I was done with him as a manager, not as a player, as a manager. I was done with him after that. Went into the Man City game. There was times when Man City were attacking and they finished an attack and Kante and Thiago Silva would look at each other and be like, what's going on? And then we went to the Leicester game. Kante was out of that game, right? He didn't play a DM against the best counter-attacking team in the league. Leicester, to me,
the best counter-attacking team. I remember on WhatsApp you said that, to be fair.
He played Kovacic, Mount and Havertz. Havertz, who he didn't even play the week before against Fulham, but he decided to play him against Leicester, which made no sense. And then, as a big manager, no other top manager, Klopp, Pep, even Mourinho, as much as whatever, we won't get into that, no other top manager would have set us up like that. So, as a coach, I think the players didn't respect him anymore. So, we had people like Ziyech that came in, Havertz came in, talking about Rudiger, all the other big players that have had big coaches elsewhere.
Yeah.
I think they were looking at him thinking, this guy's not giving us any tactics. He's not giving us anything other than like...
Yeah, other than
go out, give your best
and express yourself.
Right, and it hurts me to say this. I love Frank Lampard.
Yeah. To wrap up Chelsea, I just want to ask, do you have faith in Tuchel?
Tuchel, I think, is going to do well because I just think, tactically, he's one of the best around.
Yeah.
If it was a blank canvas, all the managers were free right now, he would be in the top 5 or 6 managers in the world, in Europe, in my opinion.
I disagree. He's a top manager. He's not elite, but he's...
What makes you say he's not elite then? Why not?
Well, I say he's not elite because I look at people comparing him to Klopp. He never got anywhere near, really, a German title when he was at Borussia Dortmund. But his Mainz career, he had a similar Mainz career. And then he went to PSG, and I'll give him that. The best achievement he has, because it ain't winning the league, because they had the most expensive squad in Europe, is that he got to a final with the Champions League, but he got battered by the far and away the best team.
You know, he had a better points per game ratio at Dortmund than Klopp. And the Bayern Munich team he was up against in Germany is one that won a treble. Like, it was a good team.
Did he get a medal for that points per game ratio?
He won a cup.
He won the DFB Pokal, whatever it's called. He won the German Cup. I know that. But I'll say it now. I wouldn't want him at my club, put it that way. He looks exciting.
What's Arteta look like then? What's he look like?
He don't look like he's got kids in his basement. I'll tell you that for free.
He looks a bit like a...
Yeah, no, he don't. Now you're forcing it.
You see what you said, though, about my man Frank not commanding respect of senior players? Going back to what I said last week, do you think that might even be a reason why Arteta will probably get away with having a bit more time in that he hasn't got those disruptive, probably hasn't got those big senior disruptive players in the dressing room?
Oh, he does.
You know what I'm saying?
I think Arteta will get more time.
He's got rid of him now. He's been getting rid of him.
Yeah.
Look,
To be fair.
I heard a sentence the other day that resonated. I do not want sentiment to ruin my club. It was a sentiment thing. We'll keep Frank Lampard. I love Frank Lampard more than... He's my favourite ever Chelsea player. Same way you kept Arsene Wenger for too many years, I'm not going to be willing to keep Frank Lampard for that many years.
Can I just ask you, because for me, like, it'd be a little bit different for us where we ain't had a lot of success for a long time by the FA Cups. But you lot, as much I hate to say it, have had a great 15 years. You've had fucking, you know, as many FA Cups as anyone. You've had European trophies, you've had leagues, you've played good football, you've played shit football and won leagues, you've done everything. So would you not, at this point, it's not like, I know Roman is, and that's why he's been so successful, because he's always in a rush for success. But you personally, as a Chelsea fan, could you not have took a little bit of stick and had them lows to then win something special with Lamps?
No,
like, why would you do that?
You're greedy.
Let me reiterate,
I love Frank Lampard, but we want to be an elite club. We want to be, I hate Man United.
You're just not in love with him no more.
As a player, I am in love with him. As a player, Ruff, do you know what I'm trying to say? Like,
Why are we slipping to
a year or two where he may do well, when we can get an actual manager who's a much better coach than him? Frank Lampard is not an elite level coach.
Yeah, there's something special. There's something special about it. Like, if it was Vieira coming back for me or an Henry or anything.
I don't want another.
You wouldn't be gas.
No, I don't want another old player coming back.
I'd give him a chance. If I've been winning leagues, I would.
Mate, if Henry or Vieira comes back to Arsenal, I'll stop supporting Arsenal. Because I know. You've got to stop.
Yeah.
I fucking hate it if they come back, because I know that would be. I agree, that sentiment. And what I've also said.
Oh, you're saying you don't want him to ever come back?
No, don't come back. That's a manager. But if you make the decision. But the difference is with Frank, and this comes down to a certain level of privilege. He should never have got the job in the first place. As you know, I've said this all along. Scott Parker is a better coach than Frank Lampard. Frank Lampard is the profile of the man. What he did as a player, he's a great fucking... He represents everything good about English football. It don't mean he's a good coach. And I said that they should never have got him. And that's something I've stuck with since he was hired. He didn't get Derby up, right? He lost the playoff final, right? He let the players go out on a piss after the playoff semi-final. He has no fucking command of a dressing room. He should never have been given $250 million to go and spend in the summer, and he should certainly not have been given a
team.
So you say he shouldn't have got a job. Firstly, like we've already said, he looks like he was an interim anyway for a year with no money, and he went and got them top four, so that's justified. And then secondly, I doubt any of them signings were his. They're probably my man's.
Only Chilwell and Werner apparently were his signings. All our signings.
But listen, let's go back to August. Havertz is the best wonder kid in Europe, and he's past Sancho. He's on Mbappe levels. Really, the way they're talking about Havertz, of course you're going to sign him. If United,
the club wanting to sign him, not Lampard. The club. club knew they wanted to sign him.
But right. Look, listen, if you're worth any, if you're a decent coach, you can get Havertz playing for you. Let me move on quickly. I want to talk to you because I know you're a big boxing fan. All of us are massive boxing fans. Yeah. AJ Fury, where do you lot stand? You're a Nigerian man as well, so I need to know where you stand. You're a massive Fury fan. Who wins it? Who do you want to win? Two separate questions.
Are you asking me first?
Yeah, I'm asking you first, T.
So my head, my heart wants AJ to win. But my head says Fury's going to bang him up. I'll be honest with you. I feel like Fury's going to, if you want my prediction, Fury's going to stop him on the 9th or 10th round. Genuinely.
Really?
I think he's going to stop him. I think everyone's going to, the safe bet in that would be Fury on points. I feel like Fury's going to dominate him.
Did the Pulev performance change your views? Because I know it changed. No, I ain't going to lie to you.
No, it didn't change
my views. I can't explain to you how good that Pulev performance was, though. That's the thing. I was almost certain Fury was going to win, right? And I probably still think he's just edges it. But that Pulev performance showed me something in...
How old's Pulev?
It don't matter how old people...
He's not been... When was the last time Pulev...
It's not so much about age. It's the style of fighting, which is why...
Stars make Joshua fights, doesn't, Eddie will
Joshua
tell you
doesn't get near Fury for me. I feel like he just dismantles him technically. I just don't think he's got the boxing brain or the ring craft to go forward and get past Fury's defence and his movement and his footwork. Like, he's not any of these other fighters who he's got. Do you know what I mean? Even against Povetkin, had him in a little bit of trouble and he turned it round. Against Pulev, he looked dominant. But
I think we see a very different Joshua fighters.
I don't feel like... I wonder whether he's got the ring craft to get anywhere near Fury.
Yeah. Okay. It should I agree, really. I'm not as... technically astute in this regard, but I do, just from what I've seen and whatever, I would think that Fury does it. But just got a feeling Joshua might do him.
That's what I'm saying.
Get lucky either way. I've just got a feeling.
No, this is what I'm saying. So, like you say, I think we all agree, head and heart, everyone who knows boxing.
John, to be fair, I'm actually bang in the middle with it because, I was a bigger Fury... Yeah, you know, I was a big Fury fan.
I love both of them, literally.
Joshua, I've liked more because of... almost because he's had a bit of stick, I think, unnecessarily. And now I want him to get the credit as well. So
where I stand, there's two things that have changed my whole view on this, right? I watched the Lennox Lewis documentary on Amazon the other day. Make sure you watch it. But that is, I feel as though Joshua's in a very similar place to where Lennox Lewis was in 2002 before Tyson, where people disregarded a lot of the things he'd achieved. They disregarded every one of Joshua's achievements. What he's done is a madness, right? People think he's this, like, he hasn't got the skill levels of certain boxers. He ain't got the power of a Wilder. He ain't got this. The Skeezer's record and his CV is unbelievable, right?
I think also,
Joshua ain't fought. I mean, Fury ain't fought for a long time. So the Pulev fight being in the middle, if Joshua fights Fury next, with the Pulev fight being just before Christmas and him being a little bit more... having a bit more recent ring experience, I think he's got a chance. And I feel as though...
He's got a chance.
I think he's got a chance, and I feel as though we'll see a very different anti-Joshua in that ring. We'll get the fierce anti-Joshua, the spiteful anti-Joshua back, which will make a big difference because he knows the country will be against him. Fury's fucking PR campaign for the last 3 years has been unbelievable, right? Joshua can never do it. People don't believe in a Joshua in the way he's been marketed. People believe in the way Fury's been marketed. He's going to feel like the underdog going into that fight. No, and he's going to know, similar to Klitschko, he's going to know he's got to bring something out of the depths of his soul to win that fight.
I think it's going to be tight. Sorry, can I just say, in terms of the PR, I think you're wrong on that. I feel like more people in this country will think anti-Joshua, in terms of people that are not necessarily boxing fans, will think anti-Joshua is going to win that fight. The Fiat 500 crew, whatever, they're all going to think Joshua's going to win that fight. He's not going into that fight as an underdog. He's not. And I just feel like...
I think it's about 50-50.
It's 50-50. No, he's not. And I feel like he's going to try and do the style...
He'll certainly feel like an underdog.
He'll do the style...
Fury's about 2-1 on.
And he's a, and in the boxing community, which is what they'll care about, he'll be seen as an underdog.
That's what he'll care about.
Only just. By the people that actually will say their opinion, it will be Fury. Obviously, they're all going to say Fury. But I feel like Joshua will try and do the style he did against Ruiz, and it won't work.
I don't think he will.
Fury, Joshua's never fought that many people that are physically like tall and like, he can't bully Fury. He can't bully him.
He couldn't bully Klitschko either, though. I know Fury's bigger than Klitschko. He didn't bully Klitschko.
Klitschko was an old man who he done late on, though. Like, yeah. I honestly, right. I like the idea of it. And I definitely, you can't knock AJ's CV 100%. And I know people love to romanticise Fury because of the story. But take everything out and just look at them as fighters and as ability. I don't understand how Joshua lays a glove on him. I really don't
lays
get
a
why.
Glove. That's a bit, but people,
I don't think it's Neil. I feel if Klitschko, you got to remember the fighter that Klitschko was. And if you look at that fight, the Klitschko Fury fight, right? This is Klitschko who has fought everyone there is to have fought in one of the most long-standing, glittering careers of a heavyweight champion, and he could not get anywhere near Fury, nowhere near him. He embarrassed him. He embarrassed one of the greatest champions of all time.
And that's someone who's
at the back end of his career, and he's not maybe not an athlete Joshua is, but in terms of skill level, for me, if Klitschko couldn't get near him, I wonder how Joshua will. I really do.
I've watched that fight a load of times, the Klitschko Fury fight. I think that there was a certain level of underestimation there. He was in Germany. He was on his own patch. I don't think. Like, obviously, what happened after Fury went off the rails, everything else, I would have loved to have seen the rematch of that. I really would have. I would have loved to have seen that. But I get it. What I've also seen in Fury's career, which is something you may not do, we look at the Steve Cunningham fight, or you look at even some of the early Chisora fights. He's been in trouble, you know. That Fury isn't this, like, infallible fucking Mark wizard in the wing that people make out. Trust me. And he ain't facing a div. Like, for me, if you go into that fight and you get a really tuned in Anthony Joshua who's been trained for speed, ferocity, and for power in that fight, it'll give him some trouble, mate. I genuinely do. But listen, that's why it makes it a good fight.
I think I would say it's like a 55-45. That was my split for betting or whatever. Fury's a favourite, 55, Joshua 45. I literally think they've both got so many things that could trouble the other person. I just don't think that Joshua will be able to maintain it over. Basically, Joshua has to bang him in the first six rounds, in my opinion. Six, seven rounds. When it gets past that, he's got no chance.
Yeah, no,
I think Joshua's the athlete, though, right? He should be the one.
Yeah, he but Fury, you don't need to look. In my heart, I want Joshua to win. I'm Niger, innit? He's a Nigerian man. I want him to win. But I just don't think...
I like both.
I like both. I like both, but I'd rather Joshua won. But just generally, if I'm being honest, I don't think he'll win.
Did you hear what AJ said about feeling let down?
By who?
By TJ for ducking Stacks for this long.
Stacks doesn't want it.
Wait, listen. For anyone listening, right?
Stacks doesn't want it. Stacks doesn't want
for
it.
The podcast audience, we've been trying to organise the TJ Stacks fight for a long, long time.
Long time.
They're both training. They're both in mad shape. T, you're in shape, bruv.
I'm not in shape.
I'm ready. I don't need to be in shape. Listen, let me just say this clear. Let me just be clear. I don't need to be in shape. I don't need any notice. I'll take this fight anytime, anywhere.
Let's go. 24 hours.
Put it this way. Give us a tip. If you don't want this fight to happen, right, give us a tip. Tip us. The link will be below and we'll get it going. We'll get it happening.
You haven't got the height.
You haven't got the size. You haven't got the power or anything to trouble me at all. I promise you that.
Where?
All I need is a location, G.
That's what we call around my way. We call that fighting talk.
Alhamdulillah.
I'm gonna smash your boy.
I'm liking the promos though, boys. You're cutting good. Let's get some proper promos going for this.
Like, the gloves are off. Let's make it happen.
Right, are you gonna fight Lou?
Yeah, I will. He's in some bad shape right now. I'll fight him all day long. He's a fat little. Nimble.
Listen, in the comments, let us know who you're backing, if you want to see this boxing tournament. Lagaloo versus Graft, TJ versus Stax. Let us know.
Who are you fighting, Dutch? I'm fighting G-Man.
He's insane, I've got to fight him. Who else?
All I say is, while I still see them Deliveroos hooked up to the email, yeah, I'll be worried about fighting G-Man, innit?
G-Man's not on it.
I'll smash G-Man to bits, bruv. Let's be real. Put us in a cage and see what happens. But anyway, listen.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
That's enough. Jim, let's move on to the next subject whilst we can, please.
Okay, so the next subject is actually a quote that we've lifted from a story in DJ Mag, and this was published last week. The article charts how nightclubs are dealing with a potential £50 billion loss in revenue to the industry in the last year due to the pandemic. And journalist Chiara Wilkinson interviewed Dan Perrin, who's the head of music and events for Studio 338. And he said, "So far, we have not received any specific support from the government or Arts Council, despite having applied, which was obviously quite a shock when the announcements were made. You don't know what you've got until it's gone. And I, for one, will never leave a party early again."
Oh, mate.
Yeah. Well, look.
I said this today. I was getting a little vibe, my little group with El and Lou. And I literally said, mate, I will never leave Bridge early again.
I'll leave every week. I love leaving.
Even I got bored of Beckenham, right? But now I won't leave anywhere early ever again.
This is what I was going to ask, because T, as we were saying at the start when I introduced you, you put on night for a living. You're the reason for a lot of people's weekend happiness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me if you think that nightclubs. Do you think tastes have changed now for good? We've not been able to go and have a proper night out for a year. How have you also, another question is what you've done, what you think the next option is, if it isn't nightclubs, how can we enjoy a night out going forward with restrictions or what else? And what other problems have you faced putting on nights in the last year?
What I think is going to happen, first of all, after the pandemic, I feel like that it's going to take so long for nightclubs to get back to what they were in terms of no social distancing, nothing. You can just literally just book a ticket, go out and not think about anything. That's not going to happen this year, in my opinion. Like, as much as I want it to, I just don't feel like it is. So I feel like when it does come back, we'll have a good, if you're in the industry, you'll have a good 3, 4, 5, 6 months where everyone's going crazy. And like how you lot were saying, like before, you used to like, you got bored of everything, blah, 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 blah. I feel like you're the kind of people that will be back out. There's people like me that was out every week anyway, or out and working every week. So as soon as everything's open, we're going to go out all the time. But the people like you guys that are saying that you got bored of whatever, you're going to be out again. But that will only last a certain amount of time. So I think the next thing after nightclubs and stuff like that is brunches. Brunch is a new going out.
Yeah.
Everyone's got so used to like socializing when they're out with the people they went out with, or the people on your table, or the table next to you. I think it's going to be so difficult for people to get out of that system, no matter what happens. In the long term, it's going to be hard for people to get out of that system. So I don't know. I fear for the future of the nightclub industry, honestly. The actual fall.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask you, because I'm about to say, basically, you're someone who no one knows a night out better than you. As simple as that. When we went on tour with the Streets back in the start of 2019 and we did the lead show, first thing we did was ring up TJ. He knows every club owner, every club in Leeds and everything else. He knows where to go. And if you're telling me that you think nightclubs are going to struggle, then that's alarming. Because I said to Dan, when this first happened, Dan, what did I say? I said, people's tastes will change. People aren't going to... I feel as though people are not going to immediately run straight back to what they used to do. I think we already were, as a society, we were a little bit bored of the whole concept of going to nightclubs because, like you say, we like talking to who we go out with. So we organise in a group chat in a week. We sit there, we're like, oh, okay, what are we doing? Oh, we're going to go for a brunch. Oh, we're going to go to this pub afterwards. We all organise it together. So why would you then, unless you're trying to nick a bird, why would you then go outside of your group to start talking to people? So it kind of, we already were moving towards a society where going out was sticking to people you know, and occasionally in a smoking section you might speak to someone you don't, but we're already going that way. So if that's the case, does that mean the death of nightclubs?
No, well, I'll say there's an age thing on this. Obviously, we're a bit older, all of us guys, we're a bit older. If I was 18, 19, 20, 21, I might have a different mindset and thinking, do you know what? As soon as the clubs are open, I'm out every single night of the week, blah, blah, blah. But for anyone
playing catch up, innit?
Yeah, you got to play catch up. But I feel like everyone, no matter the age, when they open nightclubs again, are going to be out. Mm. Like, I know, as soon as they open clubs and bars again, I'm going to be active. But as soon as, like, that little hype has died down, I feel like everyone has got so used to having little gatherings at their house.
Yeah.
Drink, which is a bit cheaper. Or going to brunches where you're picking who you can go out with. It's because that's who you want to go out and socialise with. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have fun with them, those people. I feel like the whole era, for us anyway, at our age, is going to be like we're done, basically.
You know what you know what I feel like after this is all done, because of the nature of the way that society and behavioural patterns have changed, I feel like it's going to be a big onus on cleanliness, right, and hygiene, which will... Mm. That is what I feel like will have a huge impact on what we know as a nightclub experience or as a raving experience, which is why it will lean towards, because I feel like even when and if proper nightclubs and proper raves come back, I still don't think they will be how they were. I don't feel like there's going to be... There'll still be a few people who don't care and will love it, but on the whole, I don't think there's going to be a lot of people sharing drinks, high-fiving each other, giving each other hugs, kisses on the cheek, random people. I feel like people's behavioural patterns... You know what I'm saying? I feel like people's patterns will change so much that I feel like just that whole new mentality will affect the partying process to the point where I don't feel like... I wonder whether raving particular will ever be the same again.
I'll take your point, Scott, because, Dan, was I not saying this? This was my biggest fear. My biggest fear about this lockdown was that we would start fearing others. That's what it's...
I sent you that tweet where it was like some girl was talking about... I can't believe people would just come and would have a cold and come into work. It was something about cleanliness, and it was like
using shopping trolleys
blowing out birthday candles on a cake.
Yeah,
bro, it's like I've still there's two things. I think the youth are the ones we've got to rely on to keep it going, but also I've read a lot of articles about youth in general. I don't know. You don't know the old world, but youth are being a little bit more distanced anyway because they've grown up as social media people rather than in person people. But, like I say, I still think that what I would like to call normal people who grew up getting dirty, not washing for a couple of days when you were a kid, rolling about in the mud.
Right, like, who did that?
Russell grew up on a caravan site, if you hadn't.
Me and the Beckenham, sharing bottles and fucking sprinkling it, like, the good old days, days.
Sharing it as well.
Twos on a fag and that. Right, never twos in the start again.
Oh, man, yeah,
I'll never smoke again. If no one's going to twos me, I will never smoke again.
Go on, TJ.
Can I just say so before the pandemic, like before March, I was doing I was doing two nights a week, whatever nights a week. And over the last few years, I noticed a difference happening. I could see, like, so 3 or 4 years ago, girls, for example, are more likely to go out in a dress and heels, blah, blah, blah. And I could see how it changed in the last few years where people were just not, even boys as well on that, boys are going out in shirts, jeans, shoes. In the last few years, I saw a difference where people were, like, not caring as much in terms of, like, going out, just thinking, whatever, we'll have a few drinks at home, go out. So what this pandemic has done has realised the going out bit is not as fun as the staying at home with your mates bit.
So exactly. Can I say one thing as well, too?
All I was going to say was that I agree, because for a while, though, I was getting to that point where I was like, I prefer the pre-drink or the bit after. But during this lockdown, it's made me think the opposite. It's like, I need to go somewhere to justify this. It's that like, will only last a few
months. I promise. Well, this is what I'm thinking. I'm worried.
I miss it personally. When it comes back, that's only
going to last for 3 or 4 months. But as a promoter or as an events organiser, we need to be thinking about what we're going to do to find the people that literally want to just go out all the time, regardless of what's going on, or appeal to the people that want to go to something a bit more where they can socialise with their friends. Because I feel like we've been programmed now to think what's going on right now is the best way to
The mad thing is that I've known TJ, we've all known TJ for years. I've known him for 12, 13 years. And when I first met TJ, he used to come up to Loughborough, and there was an obsession with the pre-drink, right? Mm-hmm. This is when I think it started. So when we were 21, 20 years of age, I started to realise the benefit, because at the pre-drink is where you meet all the girls, right? Mm-hmm. It's where you play the tunes you want to hear as well, right? You're in complete control of all your entire environment. You invite everyone who turns up, right? And I started to think, well, rah, that was 10 years ago, by the way. What this has done, and this is what I was going to come on to, do you think that this lockdown has accelerated something that was already there? Because since then, we've had WhatsApp groups, we've had pre-drink WhatsApp groups, we've had delivering alcohol and cigarettes to your house at whatever time of the night. We've moved towards already where you only want to see the people that you talk to. You don't want to meet new people. So it's a bigger conversation in what's happened to the night out. It's a case of, are people now a little bit more fearful of what they just don't know? Or are you becoming a little bit more insular as people, where you'd rather just, like, I'd rather see and talk to the people that I know on a night out anyway. So why would I bother going out?
I'm the fucking opposite.
I like going out raving and ducking my friends and meeting randoms.
Yeah, well, you guys, we're a specific set of people. We can go. I could go to a club. It was playing the best music, or whatever, and have a good time. But there's a whole percentage of people that will literally rather do what Dutch just explained. They'll rather be in control of their own music, not have to spend whatever. And I feel bad saying this. I'm in the events industry. Do you know what I mean? But this is our worries. These are the things that we've got to fight against coming back.
T. Just because I don't want to fuck up your profession here, but that's why the brunches are so important, because you brunches do have a lot more control over your environment, and you're effectively raving with your people.
Yeah.
Two different markets, innit? Do you not think that both of these groups of people have existed, and then you're just, one of them's coming to light at the minute, but I just think in general, maybe it's grown towards that way, but I still think it's got, if I was a youngster right now, I'd be bouncing off the walls.
Yeah.
And we say this as well, we ain't down the illegal raves, and they are still happening, happening all over the shop. So, I've got faith in the youth that they will pull through and keep meeting strangers, keep spitting on each other, keep pushing boundaries, shed her snouts, and fucking fight a good fight. No, I'm saying to you.
I feel like the brunch market was there. Pre the pandemic, it was there, but now it's massive. So pre the pandemic, I'd probably been to like 2 brunches. The last brunch I went to before the pandemic was you lot. The Christmas do that we all went to, all the boys, blah, blah, blah. Before that, I'd probably been to that one brunch. But now I've been to brunches over this lockdown.
The girls are getting... I mean, it's become obviously a thing. It's a thing girls enjoy. And again, it's a different experience because we girls, obviously, they've got geezers chatting them up left, right and centre all throughout the day and night. So a brunch is nice for them, where you've got your pals just your group that you've come out with, no bother from any divs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think a brunch is a great start to a day for me. It's like
that's what I will say as well, Dan. I respect that because I always see, yeah, the brunch is a great thing of all of us getting together. Think about it, you're a team, right? So you got all your boys, we're going to go out for a Christmas brunch. You have a little bit of a drink, then everyone feels comfortable and they're out in the invite, they're out anyway.
Yeah.
Then you go and
think the brunches can be beneficial to anything.
It's a transition period to then a good night.
So the brunch is almost a transition to
a... Mate, yeah. Brunches are good. I love brunches. I've got like, after lockdown, I've got 3 or 4 brunches that are going to be popping. Like, you have to adapt to it. Like, do you know what I mean? You've got to...
Yeah.
I feel like that is the future now. For the next 4 or 5 years, that is the future. Yeah. And obviously, I feel like, obviously, I do live concerts and stuff like that. You guys obviously not rely on that, but you do that as well. That's your big thing. I feel like they're going to be fine as well, as soon as social distancing's gone, which is going to take a little bit longer.
I wonder whether, because the other thing, which is now in between the lockdowns, a few of the West End clubs were doing and that, is like, you see, they're going a little bit more down the route of like how the Box was. And so like traditional, the nightclubs are going a bit more down the route of like shows, cabaret shows, theatre style shows where people will have a table and, do you know what I'm saying? And then they have their bottle service. And that's kind of like the bougie, the height. I feel like that's almost the way that the West End will adapt to what you would, your version of a daytime brunch
as well.
Dinners and cabaret shows and stuff like that. Yeah, well,
that suits them, Scott. For buying drinks, you're going to spend a lot more if you're plotted on your table. Yeah, and I feel like
it was getting there anyway with the Box, Cirque du Soir, do a little bit of that, do you know what I'm saying? And it's so Dubai. I feel like that's
I spoke to my friend Ben and Adam, all of our friends, Ben and Adam, are out in Dubai. Ben's just got back, Adam's still there. And that's what Dubai had changed to. So everyone, all the influencers that we've seen on Instagram, their nights out have consisted of effectively brunches, sat down tables and meals, and they end up going back to house parties.
Everyone's now programmed to it. Thank you.
That's what everyone, despite your age, everyone who's been flying out to Dubai for a good time, the good times have consisted of a sat down meal, cabaret sort of proceed, like what Scott said, then going back to a hotel or an apartment and cracking on there. That's been the vibe. So,
well, go on. Nightclubs are shut. Like, how many nightclubs are shut because of what you're saying, Dutch?
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people realise that they've lost so much money over the last year. They think when we do open again, there's going to be we're going to have a good few months. And then after that, people are programmed to just thinking there's a new, I don't want to say the new normal word, but I feel like
it is.
People think there's a different way of going out now and having socializing.
Anyway, back to music venues. Now, there's been a lot of news this week. I know that in July, the Deaf Institute and Gorilla in Manchester, which was the scene of the Manners. For me, the Manners' best show. Maybe not the best show. No, it probably might have been the best show. That got saved by a private investor back in July. But a lot of music venues are going out of business, the smaller ones. The bigger ones have been helped. The Academy Group's been backed by the government. A lot of the big music venues that we performed out on the Streets Tour and our tour have been saved. But some of the places where, you know, emerging acts have performed, like the Lexington in North London, that's about to go out of business. And also on top of which, the government are about to hike the VAT on ticket prices from 5% to 20%, which is going to fuck us again. So, boys, what do you lot make of that? Of just in general, music venues going out, will music get back to? If nightclubs ain't going to survive.
The thing is that, like you say in previously, is that a lot of this has been coming. Like, I saw a statistic that said the year in 2019, I think just over 1 in 3 traditional live music venues was closing down. There was all the stuff with Fabric, like a lot of live, I feel like live music has been, live music and super clubs have been under threat for quite a while now. So, again, look, in that sense, again, if raving isn't going to be the same for a while, then maybe there will be a little bit more of a demand for a sit-down concert than there maybe previously was. If the demand for that was dwindling towards the end of 2019, as it looks like it may have been, hopefully it might go the other way as people look for, like you say, an alternative to a sweaty party night. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Can I say something quick?
Yeah.
I thought from the promoter's point of view, when it comes to live music venues, it's hard to put on events sometimes because the fees that a lot of artists and acts charge, you've got to stump up a lot of money to make a profit. Like the risk to is not worth it. So I feel like after this is all done, for a lot of live music venues to survive, the artists kind of, this is where you guys might need to come in and say what you think on this, might need to lower their fees. I don't know how much you guys charge.
What I'm trying to say is,
I'm a promoter and I've been doing music venues for 4 years now, and to make money out of them is very, very difficult.
Because I need to big yourself up a bit.
Dan,
2 seconds. Dude, I want to big up. You've had Kano, you've had big artists, Kojo Funds, you've had Chipmunk, you've had big artists come and do your events.
Everyone, literally everyone. But yeah, it's hard to like, this is why live music venues are shutting, because I feel like a lot of the live music venues rely on promoters. They don't put on, a lot of them, like the big ones can put on like a tour or like they can put on their own thing. But some of the other ones will rely on people like myself to put on a lineup to set it out. But for us, it's hard for us to put on these lineups anymore because to make money, you've got to sell, if the capacity is 1,500, you've got to sell 1,300 tickets. And then the difference between selling 1,400 tickets to 1,200 tickets is so big in terms of losing money to making money, it doesn't make sense anymore. So I feel like this is why they're shutting.
Like margins.
So what you're saying, T, is that as artists, we've got to sort of humble ourselves. Where there ain't been any live industry, and we might have to humble ourselves to keep the industry going so that there is an industry
Everyone's got a promoter's perspective.
We're on both sides. Because we're about to launch something anyway. We're about to get to that. But we know what it's like. From our perspective, I'm thinking of it, most artists now have been starved of being able to earn money live for the last year.
Yeah. If they want to make money from shows, it's the only way it can work. There's got to be some sort of compromise, in my opinion. Because as a promoter,
there's less money there.
This whole last year has made me realise I'm not going to risk a lot of money to make a tiny bit of money. I'd rather just not do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's difficult. It's very, very difficult.
No, I hear that. I do hear that. I want to say as well that in the bio, we're gonna have a link to the trend. Keep that at 5. Because that will help. Ticket prices.
100%,
If the government are going to start upping the VAT on the ticket pricing, that's going to harm our industry even more. Like for both of us, promoters and for live music acts like ourselves, the government has to try and keep it at 5% for the time being because it's already dying a slow death. So we don't need anything else to add to that. So we're going to have a link in the bio. Please support the movement to keep VAT at 5 because that will keep music venues and keep concerts alive for you lot when you don't want to feel like going to them again. Do you know what I mean? But anyway, that ends that fucking controversial part. Jim, what next subject do you want to talk about?
So this is another tweet, and this is from Unknown T. And the tweet reads, "I'm getting a bit bored of drill. Tired yawning face emoji. Give a genre for me to jump on the next track. Flame emoji." End of tweet.
Hang on a sec. Unknown T's asking us for career advice.
Yeah, I think it was I missed the at Danny Graf bit at the start of that.
Right. Do you know what? Can I direct this one at Scott? I've said for a long while that I feel as though drill was a very temporary, massive thing. It's been massive. But do you think drill's dying as a genre of music? Do you think we got to the stage where it's not innovative enough or it's reached its limit as in terms of its reach?
thing is, right, with drill, as a genre in itself, it can feel a bit limited. But I think what it is now, like...
He's probably thinking about this
all, what drill is, right, it's just the music of the youth, of the urban youth in the UK.
Yeah.
And which is now why I remember... And it's almost, that's the thing, within the music industry and within the culture, drill is a genre. However, to the media and to the wider market sphere, it's not really that. Because I remember, do you not remember when grime started to go mainstream and then you'd get all the articles in The Guardian and this, that and the other, and it'd be like, oh, top 10 grime artists of the year. But you'd have gigs in there. You know what I'm saying? And whereas grime was just a representation. And so that's the thing now. I feel like when people talk about drill, there's like almost two conversations happening at once. You know what I'm saying? So in essence, as a genre and as a type of music, yeah, I don't know how long it has in its legs, especially now that the Americans have started doing it. And the thing is, and the Americans don't do it as well as the UK, but they've started to make it a bit tacky, in my opinion. You know what I'm saying? And now they're doing all these big tacky polished videos and stuff.
Big scene.
I was watching the Tory Lanez and the 5-year song, and I love 5-year, do you know what I'm saying? But then now there's this kind of thing where you've got big American artists trying to stick 5-year on a song or trying to stick someone else on a song and like trying to dance about it in a video. And it's all like the way they're kind of appropriating the UK drill culture, it started to make it a little bit tacky. But then what I do like is that you've kind of got people from the drill scene who I feel like are... evolving that sound beyond it. And you got people like SL did it. SL started to do it before. From when he came out with Tropical, he's always been quite experimental. Yeah. I like people like my man from Spartans, Blanco. You know what I'm saying? So I do, that's what I'm saying. I do think that there is a certain, now people are starting to experiment with it a little bit more. So I do feel like I don't feel like it's dying. I feel like it will evolve. And I feel like the people at the forefront of the culture are starting to evolve it, which is probably why now you're seeing things like people like Unknown T, who's like starting to openly accept, all right, as a culture, we need to get beyond what drill is right now in essence. But I think it'll be good to hear. The reason why I like Blanco especially is because a lot of his production is still, like the percussion is still drill. But it's just a little bit softer and a little bit like nicer on the ears, do you know what I'm saying? And so I feel like I'm interested to see where that goes within the industry and people start to experiment a little bit more with those drill drums without having to make everything too harsh and too gutter. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no. So what I'm saying is, to be fair, Millions, SL, Blanco, there's a lot of artists that are taking it, or Lowski. Lowski's last album was unbelievable. Heady. It's not just Unknown T that said that, by the way. Heady One said the same thing. He's bored of drill. Like, I want to move on. He just released a track with FKA Twigs, where it was almost spoken word. Now, Heady's got he's an influential.
He's quite experimental. I feel like with Heady, I don't feel like he gets enough credit. Probably because he's where he's come from and the OFB thing, this, that, and the other. Like his album was even like the Fred Again stuff. You know what I'm saying? I thought that was sick. And outside of drill culture thought it was sick. And it was almost that. Oh, you see, do you know what that is? It almost reminded me of, do you remember when Dizzy did Fix Up Look Sharp? And everyone in grime was like, this is trash. But then everyone outside of it was like, yeah, this is sick. Do you know what I'm saying? And I feel like Heady's a little bit ahead of it with stuff. Because I thought that Fred Again project was sick, but it got criticised.
This is a question then for everyone. Has drill got to a bigger place than grime got to? So let's go back to when we were kids and what grime was, right? Channel U days, 05, 06, Boy in the Corner, Wiley, Esky Boy. Is drill now bigger in its universal appeal than what grime was?
Yeah, definitely. I think just because... Well, because you got to think, like back in them days, I remember us like trying to put grime on in the common room, like... couple of years after it started coming out, and no one was having it at all, like none of the birds, no one. It was like, obviously now things are just, tastes have moved more towards rap songs full stop. So
it's made it's an evolution of it. I feel like a drill exists because grime existed. Do you know what I'm saying? Grime was what took that kind of street urban road music in the UK, and you kind of had garage came, and then everyone So Solid and More Fire come and turned garage a little bit hood. Then you had kind of roadside G's, which said they're gangster grime, and then you had all the East London guys who then dragged grime into the mainstream, and then all of a sudden street culture became pop culture, and that's why now I feel like drill exists because of that. And so I guess drill probably is, it is bigger. You got 18-year-old kids from London who are off, who run the drill scene in New York.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that would never have happened from grime.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
I feel like drill's bigger now because of social media. So when grime first came out, when we were younger, obviously social media must have just come out or whatever. But now, any drill song that's big gets played in a club as well.
Yeah.
Mm. It's just that big, like, it's just like unknown T tunes or low-ski tunes or whatever. You got TikTok and all this. You got people doing dances to the fucking drill songs.
Yeah.
Well, this is a mad thing.
That would never happen.
This is the difference. I remember being in America in 03. I think it was 03 or 04. So when Original Pirate Material was out, and A Boy in the Corner was out, and they were trying to break America with it, and it went down like a lead balloon, right? I feel as though drill has... because the producers have been able, because of social media, because of DMs, like a lot of these people, CJ, apparently I've heard this week, there's been a lot of stories of, you know that big drill tune on TikTok at the moment, the big one? He's apparently an industry plant. So now the industry are getting behind these drill, because they see what it's doing. And it started as a London thing, it's now smashing up America. No, saying that. It started as a Chicago thing. We made it what it was, and now it's gone back to New York, and it's now... he's fucking up America through TikTok, which is says it all.
Bro, when grime started, none of us was here. None of us was none of that stuff.
So what I'm saying is, a better question is, what's had more of a cultural impact? Because I'm looking at grime. Grime, you know, maybe we're nostalgic because we grew up in that era. But what grime did then is not, I don't think it's what drill's doing now. Do you know what I mean, though? In terms of the artists that came out of that wave, what it did to the UK, it was so unprecedented. No one had seen nothing like grime before it happened. We've seen grime now and drills happen. So all I'm saying is, in terms of a cultural impact, which one's had more of a cultural impact? For me, it's grime.
100%. Yeah, 100%. It's not even close.
Yeah. Even though as irrelevant as grime is today, I know for a fact that I don't want to... I'm an artist now and I don't want to spit drill bars. I'm managing an artist who spits drill bars, and I'm trying to, you know, we're trying to tell him to fucking move off of that. We want to do more innovative drill. But I wanted to spit grime bars when I heard that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah,
like the guy said, drill wouldn't be here if it wasn't for grime. If it wasn't for the pioneers in the industry that let urban culture come to the forefront, it wouldn't be here. So you can't, for your question, definitely grime, 100%. 100%.
Sick.
Yeah.
Hold on. Right, the only other thing I wanted to ask you before we get off the music subject, your favourite freestyles from the last 20 years of freestyles, what's your... And I should have asked you before so you had time to think about this, but I put up an English Frank SBTV the other day on my Twitter, and you don't realise how much... Some of these freestyles had more impact than a lot of big songs at the time. The Sneak Bow one. Remember the Sneak
Bow? Freestyles would have been a thing back then, wouldn't they?
The Danny Graft SB warm-up, mate. A lot of these were game changers. Give me your top three, or don't even top three. Give me your, off the top of your head, what are your favourite, the ones that have resonated with you lot the most, your top freestyles?
Hey, Coke, Fire in the Booth.
Oh, I was going to say Hey, Coke as well.
Seminal, like...
I was never as gassed on that.
That was hard.
It was very like ploddy for me. It was a bit like, I know the bars were nuts, but it was almost like he was like, fucking hell, look at this metaphor. I was like, nah, man, it weren't.
What about the Wretch?
Loyal
Karnas. Loyal Karnas Fire in the Booth was mental. That's one of the best. That. Crazy, absolutely, as good as any bit of rap that's ever come out of the UK. Mad, absolutely mad.
Akala was one of the biggest.
Akala. It's a lot to digest.
It depends what you're looking for from the freestyle. You're looking to get gas, or you're looking to deep it. Do you know what I mean?
It's the first Danny Graf's first warm up session.
That's what I just said.
I ain't done nothing. Yeah, I ain't hit that level since. Unfortunately.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to leave some of these links.
Who the fuck did we use?
The game changer for me, in terms of freestyles, Sneak Bow, when he did his warm-up session, changed him and English Frank. I remember that era. English Frank, Bassey's one as well was a hard one. In terms of firing a booth, Getz is always...
Oh, you must have, Scott, you liked... I like that one as well, the Tef, Young's Teflon one.
Oh, mate, Young Tefs.
Yeah.
The beat, the Terminator beat or something, when it not Transformers or something.
I think he won as well. The one that Geezer recently, you've seen that guy recently, he's been taking old grime freestyles and putting new instruments over, that Getz and Skepta one.
Yeah, I saw it on Instagram. I know what you're talking about. I saw it on Insta, yeah.
Hey, Wise, Wise the producer, he's called. Look it up. Wise the producer, Skepta and Getz freestyle. Sick.
Yeah,
that's
it.
Wise, remember, W-I-Z-E.
Big nigga shout, you can't even jump in the bath. Remember them grime tunes?
That was Aim High, yeah? That was Aim High.
Aim High
free,
Business,
that
yeah.
That's still the one beat. If I could recover a beat from anywhere, that would be the beat to write to.
Did you not Target, ask? One of you asked Target. That. One of you messaged Target the other day and said, can we get that beat?
I don't think he's got it.
He won't have it anymore.
On an old Genius hard drive or fucking Discarders lost it or someone like from East London's lost it, basically.
I'm gonna be putting up some of these classic freestyles, some of these classic beats. I'm gonna be putting up on a manor on my Twitter, so follow us. I'll put the link in the bio for afterwards. But Jim, let's move on to the last bit. A little bit of light-hearted stuff.
Okay, right. So this one is a fan message to the Manor account from someone that wants to remain anonymous. So it reads, lads, I'm an above average indulged single man. So well endowed.
He's a well endowed man, no, yeah.
He's not well endowed, he's averagely. Well, he's above average.
Oh, just above average.
In the right
Everyone
light.
Says that.
In the right light. In so, yeah, above average indulged man.
What's that got to do with us?
Wait, I'll get into it. Open bracket, in the right light, close bracket, and he's got, and he says, with an all right frame. So he's got an all right body. Then he goes on to say, I'm a bit of an extrovert, who dares wins kind of character. And I've recently stumbled upon OnlyFans. Do you think it's a bad idea? Any other suggestions to make quick money?
What, him going on OnlyFans?
Yeah,
OnlyFans.
I think that's what he's getting at, yeah.
I mean, again, I don't really know what the appetite is from, I think girls, it's almost a reverse demand, isn't it? They see too much dicks and dick pics that they don't really ever need to pay for it.
I say that. But
I know a couple guys up here. I'm not going to say names. But I know a couple guys up here that are apparently making money from that.
Nicki Minaj's ex-boyfriend Safari, who's hilarious, right? He makes about £2 million off $2 million a month off of OnlyFans. Mm-hmm. Right, I don't know how he goes out of Eric Camino.
Your famous star,
did it? Chris Brown got it a couple of months ago, didn't he?
Tiger's got the highest
earning man. Tiger makes £6 million sterling a month.
It's just subscriptions is the way to make peas, and that's how they're doing it. Chris Brown could put a little topless picture on there, and you got bare fans that are gonna.
I don't think anyone, is a normal bloke going to make any money on OnlyFans?
I don't know, but he was an above-averagely endowed man with a decent frame and an extrovert.
You've got a chance then.
Know what I mean?
Listen, we've all had the little think about what we could do to make some more money. I certainly wouldn't make a penny on OnlyFans.
Not a chance. No way,
Are you getting
I'm gonna
do it. Dutch?
Huh? Well, you never know. You never know. Well, they like the if you like teddy bears, but no.
You'll have a little following. I reckon you'd nick a few quid.
Mate, don't gas me up because I'll go and do it tonight. So don't fucking do it. Seriously,
right?
Okay, mate. If I could make a bit of money, I would. But no, to be fair, everyone would be sitting there thinking, oh, what can we do? And it's all right for birds to do it. And there's so many women that are making a hell of a lot of money. People don't know the stats. Think about OnlyFans. There's a lot of money that is being generated from this.
Have you seen the top earner? Have you seen what's it called? Where's it gone?
Megan from Love Island.
I sent this to my mate the other day. The top earner on OnlyFans, right, is what's her name? Black China.
Yeah.
Right. How much she earns a month?
A mil.
OnlyFans. No, 15.4 million sterling a month.
15 a month. Mate, I'd show me organs for that money. Like, you can see.
Mate,
like,
you do not. You don't want to know what I would do for 15 mil a month.
I'm too scared of my mum. I'm too scared. Listen, I'm not on that.
Bro, what are you scared of, though, T? What are you scared of? What are you scared of?
I'll do OnlyFans.
Bruv.
No. My 15 mum will kill me. My mum will kill me. I don't care about the 15 mil. I'd rather, like. No, my mum will kill me, bro.
If you couldn't get fat, if no family were ever going to find out, would you do it?
Do what? Ask, what's the question?
Do little dances on OnlyFans.
Naked ones. Naked street dances.
I don't even imagine this now. It's a sword, Dan.
No, because he's a good dancer. So this is what I'm saying. You can probably make like above average P.
I didn't tell the fans. T's a dancer as well. But in a like break dance.
You know what? Exotic.
Hey, you can't see me. Kill me.
Hey, you can't do this.
No, listen, hey T, if you want to open, if you want to do with OnlyFans, that's on you. So
I said I would never do it. Never, no way. So my mum would kill
me. You said
me.
That. I didn't hear that though. I'm gonna ask another question quickly before we wrap this up. It's a bit difficult because for certain reasons, but what is? Me and Dan will tell you about what married life has been like and the ag we've had to go through during this lockdown. So maybe not ag for Dan, but I've had plenty of ag. What has single life been like? In terms of what has it been like? How many rules have you broken? Do you care? Have you been out there or has it been a little bit more difficult to get the non? Give us that. We're ending on a light note, T. Do you know
I'm
what I mean?
I'm assuming you're asking me because I don't know what
I'm asking, situation. No, I don't... Well...
Okay. I know what your situation and yeah, boom.
Yeah.
It's hard, isn't it? Because you can't go out and meet girls.
Yeah.
And then you don't really want to get a dating app because...
Why don't you want to get a dating app?
I've had a dating app years ago, but I wouldn't have one now. It's difficult because what are you going to talk about? You're talking about your life and stuff like that, but you're not going to reveal too much about yourself to someone you don't know. This is just me anyway.
And you're only going to be talking about lockdown in a minute. It's going to be a bit shit.
Yeah, so you're like, what have you done today? I've been to the living room. I've been for a run. I've been to the... what are you saying? But, like, yeah, it's just difficult, isn't it? Because I would rather be on a night out and meet someone than do it. DM someone on Instagram. That's not my style. Like, do you know what I mean? So it's difficult, man. I want to be off the streets. As many people that are single right now, I want to be off the streets. It's the same. Like, the North is good. Like, if you're out... I live up north and I live in Leeds, yeah? If you're out, there's a lot of girls about and blah, blah, blah. If you want to be that way and want to move to those of girls, it's very...
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
What you're saying to you is you want to make an honest man of yourself, innit?
Yeah, I'm ready.
You're ready,
yeah? Wait, yeah, what about Elton you?
Elton John said it best. Are you ready for love?
Are you ready?
No, I don't know about that.
Are you ready for love?
Are you ready for love? But listen, let's call it there. Lads, you've been fucking wonderful tonight. You have actually been fucking good value. Good value entertainment. You've all had very strong opinions. It's been explosive. But to end the show, like we always do, I'm going to end it with some geezer admissions. I'll start. My name is Dutch. I'm a geezer. Right. And this week, I've tried to plan a Valentine's in lockdown. And I have not really come up with any answers to it, to be fair, but I've tried my best.
Lies.
No, I'm not. Mate, what do you do? There's nothing to do. I've tried,
I guarantee you got a bag of presents booked. I've seen your little hampers. I've seen your hampers in the past.
Mate, them hampers were from family members. It weren't for her. No, I've not got anything planned. It's my birthday as well, innit? So she's got to treat me, so...
Oh, shit, yeah, you got your out.
I've got my out every single Valentine's. Lads... What geezer admissions? I'm going to go to TJ first. TJ, how it works, you've got to admit to doing something that's slightly moist. So this is going to be very easy for you. So,
whoa. Okay.
What have you done slightly moist this week?
Cool. So I'm a geezer. And I've been sending, in the group chat, I've been going running, going to the gym. But this week, I've baked 3 cakes.
You baked?
I'll be honest.
Baking.
Why laughing? Why laughing?
Bro, why are you waiting till now to tell me that? What do you mean you're baking?
Is it true?
You got a baking obsession. Do you know what? We're going to get tea on...
I love cake, innit? I love cake.
Someone sort out the Channel 4 admission form for the Great British Bake Off. If tea goes on the Great British Bake Off, I could die a happy man. I'll die a happy man if you do it.
I love cake. I know you. That's my mission, innit?
It's one thing to love cake. To bake three in a week is the next level.
Not all for me. Not all for me.
That's incredible. That's incredible.
For my support bubble.
Your support bubble. Big old bubble you got there, isn't it?
So, T, why don't you bring this up? When I said about getting gal in lockdown, you could have just said you were baking cakes for them, innit?
That's not what I was doing, but it's cool.
Dan, give us your geezer.
Duh, fucking hell. Danny Graft, I'm a geezer. Fuck me, I ain't had a drink. I ain't had a drink or smoke for over a month now. I'm just a miserable little... I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm stretching. I'm doing stretching and core... And leg exercises. I'm just a boring fucking like Pilates instructor, basically.
You need lockdown. We need lockdown.
I need a drink, mate. This whole thing, I'm pretty sure I can have a drink tonight.
Have a great
I wrote a bar for the first time without a snap, which is why I'm now
massive
may have a
achievement.
Snap tonight.
No, listen, big up, Dan. Seriously.
I've been smoking a fake like a plastic straw to pretend that I'm smoking something. Like,
big up,
I think I'm gonna have a little drink and celebrate tonight, I think.
Good man. Have a bit of red wine, mate. Scotty, give us your admission, mate.
I'm Scotty Stacks, I'm a geezer, and I bought a ring light to make my skin look nice on this podcast.
Yeah, that wins it. That takes the biscuit. Well done. Well done, Scott. That takes the biscuit. Well done, mate.
Sweet,
mate.
Why didn't you use it?
It's got the wrong USB connection, so it backfired.
That he went from looking like Beyonce to looking like Oprah. But anyway, listen, we'll be back in 2 weeks, everyone. There's loads of episodes to come. Make sure you lot subscribe, please. I don't ask many things, but make sure you subscribe. You'll get notifications as soon as an episode drops. Share it as well. If you're enjoying the episode and you're thinking about helping us out a bit more, Jim will provide the link in our description to give us a tip. It's a support page that helps us go in, you know, it might help Dan get back on the booze. So please don't feel free to tip. In the meantime, keep sending us in your issues you'd like to discuss. Let us know how you're dealing with lockdown, and any special guests you'd like us to get on. Take care, everyone. God bless.
Sweet.
I'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you later.
Big up TJ. TJ, you've been a fantastic guest.
Thank
Big
you.
Big up Dan. Go and have a drink, son. Scotty, enjoy the view. We'll see
Everyone
you in 2 weeks.
Stay positive as well, yeah?
Stay positive.
Stay positive. Have a drink somewhere for the politics. In.